This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Good evening and welcome to Hooked, Joy 94.9's program about addiction. Research shows that the LGBTI community has addiction problems of at least twice that of the general population, and we want to explore why and how this has come about. There are many suffering addiction, many more that are affected by those in active addiction, and people that are grateful in recovery. My name is David.
Hey David, my name's Russ. What are some of the reasons behind this problem? Are there pathways towards recovery and change? How does addiction affect loved ones, family members, and partners of those in active addiction? We are not experts in these fields, but a couple of friends who both happen to be in recovery together, we believe that there needs to be a conversation in our community about addiction.
Oh, yes, you're right there, Russ. And if you'd like to join us in that conversation, you can SMS us, SMS us. I don't know. Have we got our teeth in tonight? On 0427 Joy 949. That's 0427 569 949. Or email us at onair@joy.org.au or hooked@joy.org.au. We're also on Facebook. You can check out our Facebook page, which is Hooked on Joy 94.9. I'm hooked on Joy 94.9, aren't you, Russ?
I cannot get enough of it. I've been a joyster for 5 years now. What about yourself?
Same here. By the way, just on a serious note, if you're experiencing immediate problems or if content of this program raises issues that cause distress, you can call Lifeline on 13 11 14, Beyond Blue on 1300 22 46 36, or go to joy.org.au/support, which is a really good resource, isn't it, Russ?
Look, it's there to help everybody, and if you need help, all you've got to do is ask, and Joy has got that all on their website, which is exactly where we need it.
Yes, that's true. Look, another person you could ask for help if you're ever thinking that you're struggling at all is Dr. Glenn Hosking. Now, Dr. Glenn is a clinical psychologist who works with adults, adolescents, children and families. Glenn has over 10 years experience working in psychological clinics, schools, hospitals and universities, and with a referral from your GP, which we've talked about many times before. A mental health plan, you can claim most of your consultation fees through Medicare. It sounds like an advertorial, but Glenn is a great guy. He's a former Joy celebrity. I still think of him as a Joy celebrity because he used to be here on Joy 94.
Is that right?
Oh, yes.
No idea. Okay.
Oh, yes. Certainly.
So we're speaking to alumni tonight.
We certainly are.
Wow.
And Glenn's quite often as a psychological commentator on all sorts of things, Channel 7, 3AW, all those sorts of things, those stations that we don't need to listen to because we're too busy listening to Joy 94.9. But he's well known. And welcome tonight to Glenn on Hooked on Joy 94.9. How are you, Glenn?
Good evening. I'm well, thanks. How are you guys?
Very well, Glenn. It's good to have you on our show. We're very happy to have you here.
In fact, I've been dying to have you on the show for quite some time. It is, well, you know, just getting one of, as Russ described you, as an alumni. I used to be on Joy 94.9 quite a lot.
Yeah, I did. I used to. It's been a few years now, so it's been really nice to be back on Joy. It's been a delight, actually.
Glenn, what did you do on Joy?
I used to do a drive program called The Royal Dalton with a guy called Michael Dalton.
We did
that for probably 6 or 7 years, I think.
It felt like about 400 years. Because you were a fixture, permanent fixture here.
I love that show. That was a great show.
Yeah, it was nice. I had a great time. I loved it completely.
Well, we've got you here tonight for other reasons.
You are a clinical psychologist, and of course our program is about addiction. And one of the first things I wanted to talk about was, because we have touched on it before with other professionals within your field and other fields as well, one of the first things I wanted to talk about, because it does come down to a few people's problems, is internalized homophobia. Would you like to explain to our listeners about internalized homophobia?
Yeah, certainly. I think it's such an important thing that we all recognise, because it has the potential to have a really big impact on mental health of all of us in the LGBTI community. Internalized homophobia is something that sort of grows out of someone who often doesn't like something about themselves when they're coming to terms with their sexuality. Mm. And there's this kind of sense that many of us have that kind of wishes that we weren't who we were, we're who we are. And even though many people come to a point where they are much more accepted for who they are, or they feel much more comfortable about who they are, many do not. And often there are still some elements of that kind of linger around for the individual and kind of permeate something or even a large part of that, kind of who they are. And it's going to have big kind of mental health problems. You imagine that someone kind of grows up with something about themselves that they don't like, that it can really affect their sense of self, their sense of well-being, you know, their kind of overall regard kind of as who they are and their sense of competence and adequacy and so on and so forth. But it can also impact on how they then engage with people outside of the community, that they might feel that they need to hide who they are or something about who they are. Mm. And I think that sometimes this does impact when people are accessing psychological services for, you know, issues such as addiction, what we're talking about on this program, but also other mental health problems.
Well, that's where I was thinking of going. Contributing factor to maybe addictive behaviour, do you think?
Well, I mean, certainly I think that there's a big part of it that can manifest as addictive behaviour. Certainly, you know, it does increase the vulnerability for a range of mental health problems, and certainly addictive behaviour would be, in my view, one of the big ones that it can increase the vulnerability for. I mean, you mentioned in your intro that the susceptibility to addictions is so much more significant for people in the LGBTI community. And I think that, you know, there's certainly a correlation with some of that stuff.
Glenn, of my limited time, I've been in recovery for 12 years now, and I've got, well, my understanding for myself personally, I only like to talk about my recovery, is that it has come from trauma and subsequently to get some sort of headspace away from that trauma, I needed to see a psychologist and subsequently became an alcoholic because I just needed some help, and the grog took away all the feelings. So there is a correlation, I think, there with internalized homophobia and some sort of childhood trauma. That was certainly my experience. Do you think that the correlation with trauma or something that's happened to someone in the GLBTI community can be looked at that way?
I think that one of the things that we do know about addictions is that it's often used as a method to escape, that it's often used as an opportunity to numb painful feelings, and whether that comes from trauma about dealing with sexuality or trauma or other kinds of trauma, that it certainly, you know, is frequently something of a mechanism that you know, people bring into in order to be able to, you know, like you say, escape or numb the pain that they're experiencing.
So it could be trauma like rejection or maybe discrimination, mm. or even just going back to your own self-worth not being enough because you happen to be LGBTIQ, or, you know, maybe self-esteem and all those sorts of factors.
Yes, and also bullying, you know, yeah. as a child and as an adolescent. Feeling a sense of maybe not being good enough, that they can't live up to expectations that are set to them by others, family, and so on and so forth.
And it's certainly at this time during the COVID-19 pandemic, are you finding more people are looking for help?
Look, this pandemic has produced a real range of risk factors for a lot of people. You know, if we kind of consider that one of the ways in which many people adapt and cope in times of stress is by support from other people and, you know, finding outlets to connect with others. And a situation like this does reduce the ability to be able to do those kind of things, that people aren't able to connect with others, they aren't able to get that kind of support. Together with that, there's a range of really stressful realities that people are experiencing. There are a range, people are losing their jobs, people are worried about their future, people don't necessarily know what's going to happen on a financial, stream of things, and also, to an extent, people are worried about their health and worried about what's going to happen there and the health of people that are close to them. And all of those kind of things are risk factors for people and will likely, increase certainly the vulnerability. And certainly I'm seeing in the work that I'm doing and certainly a lot of the research indicating that people are struggling within this, that there's significant increases in levels of anxiety and levels of depression and so on and so forth.
It sounds like a little bit of a pandemic of problems and challenges for people, certainly, and their mental health. It doesn't matter whether you're LGBTI or Q, I suppose. You could be a mum and a dad at home with kids and all that sort of stuff, with work problems, those sorts of problems that you've talked about. Tell us, mental health has been just given a whole lot of funding by our federal government, and it's not about the political situation, although we never thought we'd hear a federal government saying, here, have hundreds of millions of dollars. Why do you think they've done that?
Look, I think that's an appreciation of the stress and challenges that are facing many people at the moment, that there's bucket loads of research that situations that force people into lockdown, force people into isolation, mean that people are more susceptible to mental health problems. There's bucket loads of research when people experience situational challenges where they're, losing their jobs, where they're facing financial hardship, that it increases the stress on individuals and that they kind of benefit from mental health difficulties. And so there's been a range of things that have kind of occurred within that. And one of the really important ones is that for people that are unable to or unwilling to see a practitioner face-to-face, that psychological services are now rebatable through telehealth, so through video sessions. And there were provisions for that in the past for people living in rural and remote areas, but otherwise that was not available for, people, most joy listeners in sort of Melbourne metro areas to have access to doing that. And so practitioners now can rebate sessions that are done through video or through telephone, which is a huge change. And then there have been other sorts of areas of funding put into research, and Beyond Blue have a great online resource where people can access an online chat with someone and find some referral details to services through that, which is hugely positive and is a really important recognition of the kinds of difficulties that people are likely to be to experience. Some of that's normal. I think that it is important that people appreciate that none of us have ever been through anything like this before. Mm. And so we're going to have strange reactions to it. We're going to have increases in our anxiety. We're going to feel a heightened sense of loneliness as a result of the isolation. A big part of that's normal. But if it does become something that is significant and debilitating for an individual, then there are these kind of services.
What are some good pointers for people who just, go home and think, oh, my God, I'll have another bottle of wine, or I'm home for a week by myself, I'll drink 10 bottles of wine?
Well, I think one of the big things to be mindful of within this is to notice whether there has been a significant shift, and if you are noticing a marked change in the amount you're drinking or other substances that you're kind of using, and checking in with that kind of stuff. The first port of call within that is to speak to a GP and to get some advice on services and get some advice on ways in which you might be able to assist within that. And other kinds of professions that, and professionals that you might be able to connect with and might be able to be able to get the assistance of.
Sorry, Glenn, I didn't mean to interrupt you then. Why does, I guess, depression, for example, feeds off loneliness and isolation? I do know of a close personal friend that had a terrible experience at the start of isolation and went into a deep, deep, deep depression. What can be done for these people? It was very scary for friends. We all wonder whether we should be calling doctors on his behalf or so on. It can be quite serious for people, can't it?
Yes, it really can be. And you know, one of the kind of correlates with depression is that sense of loneliness and that sense of worth. And for a lot of people, they really feed off human interaction and feed off human connection. People find a sense of fulfillment when they are doing things and when they are connecting with other people.
Mm.
Now, one of the things that psychologists often do when working with depressed people is find activities that they find enjoyable. You know, in the early stages of the kind of work, find activities that the individual finds enjoyable and actively sort of schedule some of that stuff in. You know, a lot of the time when people experience depression, they pull back from the sort of stuff that they used to find enjoyable. They stop exercising, they stop socializing with friends because they feel that it's kind of too hard, or they feel that they need to somehow protect themselves or preserve some kind of energy. Whereas, in fact, the opposite is true. In fact, what is when someone's feeling low and feeling down, actively finding time to put in those kind of activities is a way in which we can kind of help. And when you take a situation like this where socializing with friends hasn't been possible, for a lot of people they've not been exercising because gyms are closed.
Mm.
For a lot of people, other sorts of activities, whether it be going to the theatre or going out for a meal, are not possible and are not happening. And therefore, that kind of sense of fulfillment is impacted and is lost. And that's difficult for people. That really creates, you know, a kind of sense of challenge for people because those sort of things do feed in into low mood, which then can lead to, a sense of depression, which people might then try to cover up with substance use.
So that brings me to my next question, because I miss all of those things, but fortunately I've been able to remain connected either through joy or work or other things like that. But what can we look out for with our friends that might be in that similar situation to Russ's friend? What are the sort of signs that we should be looking out for with our friends if, things are starting to go wrong for them? Because they may be withdrawing so much that we just cannot find out what's really going on.
Look, in these kind of situations, it is important to try and stay as connected with people as possible. And there's a challenge in itself. And thankfully, I guess, there are some easing of the restrictions that does aid at least some kind of connection. But certainly, there has been risk factors kind of with that. And one of the things that I've been advocating for is for people to find ways in which they connect with other people through technology or through means that were kind of acceptable. You know, even someone I know was demonstrating some really low, was feeling really low, and so we were kind of organising times to go for a walk, around our park lights together, that kind of stuff, to try and kind of bring about some sort of, shift or to change something, or at least, relieve some of that distress, even momentarily. But certainly try and stay as connected as possible. When people find themselves in a situation where they're completely disconnected, as many people have been, it's a big risk factor. So when people are doing things like what Russ is talking about, finding a way to connect with them is really, really helpful.
Glenn, and I'm curious then on that level, what if the fear of coming into close contact with people and being outside and the fear of COVID-19 has got them so debilitated that they won't leave the house, they won't connect with people? What do you do? I'm sure there are many listeners who have experienced someone in their lives over the past 8 weeks that have experienced something along these lines.
Look, I mean, I think that there's certainly a degree of normality about that, that many people are fearful. And, you know, particularly as we're seeing an easing of restrictions and perhaps a much more relaxed attitude to things, that kind of just visiting the supermarket is something that can be really challenging for people because there are a lot of people around. But when people are not willing to, you know, leave the house or what have you, we've got to try and find other ways to connect with them, to use video calls, to use the phone, to be able to find other ways to kind of connect with them, to demonstrate that sense of worth that they do have.
And also that they're not alone as well.
Yeah, that's right, exactly, that they're certainly not alone. And if you know, that involves kind of finding another way that you can show them that you care about them, whether it be, you know, dropping off something for them or cooking them a meal or what have you, then they're sort of great ways to kind of do that. You know, I think that it is helpful also to kind of validate and normalize people's experience. This is a hard time for many people, a hard time for a lot of people, and that, you know, it doesn't mean that someone's abnormal or doesn't mean that someone's irrational if they're struggling at this time. In fact, we would likely expect something kind of like this in a situation that we're all going through.
God, that makes the most sense of anything I've heard anyone ever say to me. It's that people would be, and it's very normal for them to be feeling just like that during something like this. It does make sense.
Now, Dr. Glenn, I've got a number of messages already building up here at Joy 94.9. Mm-hmm. And if you do have a question for Dr. Glenn, please send a message to 0427-JOY-949. Now, the first one comes from Graham, and it says, I can't thank you enough for talking about internal homophobia. I've always wondered if gay people's reactions to society's disapproval, hatred and religious beliefs also qualifies as internal homophobia. So I suppose that's wondering whether we have our own internalised homophobia or also people's reactions to those things qualify as internal homophobia. What do you think?
Look, I mean, I think that we could have a big, long discussion about the impact of internalised homophobia on the community, you know, even more broadly. You know, I think that there is evidence, and when I see it in my own circles as well, in terms of attitudes that LGBTI people often have within the community as well. And I think that a lot of that is explained through the same lens of internalized homophobia. And then I do think that Graham has a fair point there, that perhaps some of that does then manifest in, a kind of a lowered tolerance of other groups.
It's funny because I think we could do a whole series of programs on this topic. There's also a message here from South Yarra. I'd like to ask Glenn, has he ever experienced depression and how does he deal with it? Many health professionals are very busy and can also become sick as well.
Look, personally, you know, probably not as being a health professional, have I experienced depression. I think that a big part of my training has certainly been recognizing this and finding ways to manage the kind of workload and the kind of heaviness from it. But I would certainly say that as a young adult, as a teenager, kind of dealing with my own sexuality and the struggles there, that there were certainly some very dark times that I experienced. Absolutely.
The last message is, why does it take a pandemic for the federal government to be interested in mental health? That's, with a comment of pretty pathetic. So, I don't know, I think that explains itself. But I never thought I would hear an LNP government saying, we're giving out hundreds of millions. But then I've had other people I've talked to and they've said, the pandemic, unfortunately, we've heard today that there's been 100 lives tragically lost through this pandemic, which is a very low tally, but still it affects so many other people as well. But they're saying that the real pandemic will actually be in mental health in the years to come as well.
Well, I think that there is certainly that view that there's, another curve that needs to be flattened. And I have heard the government saying that as well, that, all of the risks. And one of the early things that the government did say was that resources that indicated that just things like the searches for domestic violence resources had gone up and more significantly over the course of this kind of period of time, which, you know, does indicate that there's that real vulnerability.
Hooked on Joy.
Ah, yes, you are. Listening to Hooked on Joy 94.9 with David and Russ. Joy 94.9's program about addiction. If you're experiencing immediate problems or if content of this program raises issues that cause distress, you can call Lifeline on 13 11 14 or Beyond Blue on 1300 22 46 36, or go to joy.org.au/support. Now, we've got Dr. Glenn here answering questions, and I've got some questions about sex.
Hi.
Yeah, look, I'm just thinking at the moment, I know a number of people that are, you know, certainly single or maybe just more active in a sexual sense. And during the pandemic, we've been told not to have sex with strangers in the night. What can I make of this?
Well, I think that it's really important to appreciate this as one of the risk factors for the LGBTI community, or maybe I would just say the male community in that kind of context. But a big part about for a lot of people is sex and is connecting with people through the use of various apps or attending sauna or conference venues, and that isn't the case at the moment. People are unable to do that. And that's a challenge for some people. People are going to find that difficult to be able to adapt to that and adjust to that, and that's okay. I think that for people that might be listening that have sort of struggled within this and maybe thought that they shouldn't be struggling to deal with this sudden shift in their day-to-day routine or the sorts of things that they found enjoyable or have found fulfillment out of, to be suddenly changed is okay.
So if you're addicted to chem sex, for example, and you know that there's every possibility that you may get COVID-19, how do you control something like that?
If you're addicted to chem sex, particularly.
Yes. So, for example, you know, I'm sure that all of us are aware that, well, my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, Glenn, is the that you can pick up COVID-19 through saliva and touch and so on and so forth. So isn't sex, chem sex, I guess, I would imagine, I have never been addicted to chem sex, but isn't that a way of a high-risk behaviour, or will any type of sex be a high-risk behaviour if you don't know your partner well enough? I know this is going to bring up all sorts of stories about HIV and AIDS pandemic, but what is the right thing to do during this period?
Yeah, look, I mean, I don't know in terms of the kind of rates of infection for this kind of stuff through sex, but I guess we do know that, you know, contact of that kind of nature is something that is being discouraged, that it's not on the list of kind of five things that you're allowed to do it as
really?
Mentioned by the government.
Well, I don't know. We're waiting for the date that they put that on. But,
I suppose... Yeah, that's right. It might be interesting. But, you know, I guess, you know, one of the kind of things that if people are living by those kind of rules, that they might find that difficult, and that it might be a real struggle for people who have found that as a regular kind of part of their sort of, you know, week-to-week existence.
So, in other words, I know I can speak for friends. They've found this whole thing very difficult.
So there's a disconnection because that's possibly how people connect, but not just sexually, but just the fact that they're connecting with other people.
With our community, correct.
And suddenly that's gone. What do you think about not watching the news and things like that?
I do think that that's a really important point, that in this current situation where we are flooded with news, where we have so much opportunity, you know, there are 24-hour news channels, there's more news than ever before. And, you know, we have regular kind of updates online. I mean, I don't know about you, but, you know, I subscribe to a couple on my phone and I'm regularly getting kind of updates around, you know, kind of what's going on, restrictions, whole numbers of infections, whole numbers of fatalities, all of this kind of stuff. And I think it can be difficult. No, and so I think it is useful.
Addictive behavior, doesn't it? Because I've got to know. And, oh, look, you know, things aren't going that well. I know, I'll just quickly check the news. Oh, things are really bad in the United States. Well, thank God it isn't like that. You know, it almost becomes a little bit of an addictive habit in a way.
Yeah, it can be a real perverse kind of interest that kind of around it. And I would encourage people, if they are finding that distressing and they're finding that difficult, to limit it.
Yeah.
They don't have to eliminate it, but you can certainly limit it and, you know, kind of put some parameters kind of around it. I think that, you know, a lot of people are also working from home, which might also add to those kind of challenges where there might be a lot more kind of freedom about how you're kind of doing things, and there might be a lot more sort of freedom about kind of, you know, how often you check stuff out. And so that can also increase some of the risk factors that people have for, you know, news overload.
I've actually got a little bit of a comment on working from home. Firstly, there's a message that says there's been an increase in sales for sex toys. So that's fantastic. But it says also, I see many positives during this whole period. I think the modern world was crazy before, and this new normal has many positive aspects. I'm thoroughly enjoying working from home and rediscovered myself. And in fact, last Wednesday, when I was doing Melbourne's Most Uplifting Music Mix, I asked people, what were the good things that they'd discovered during this lockdown period? And I think there has been some amazing things. And I think maybe if we focus on some of the really good things, you know, somebody said, oh, I don't have to travel to and from work each day. I'm saving 10 hours a week. But some of the good things can be focused on, I think.
I think there are a lot of good things that do come out of that and out of working from home. And that, you know, often, you know, partners are finding out a lot more about each other's work and about how each other work with it, you know, within their businesses, or just seeing a different kind of side of each other as a result of working from home, of kind of connecting with people. You know, for people that have children and are needing to homeschool, of course that's challenging for people, but there's also a connection that can kind of come sort of from that. And you know, there are risks within that, but it's certainly not without its reward.
Yeah, look, it's been fantastic talking to you tonight, Dr. What am I doing? Dr. Glenn. It's been so good to have you on the show. As I said, we really look forward to having you on the show. And maybe we'll see if we can get you back soon. And as things change, of course, you can always check our podcast because we'll have a link. But, you know, if you just do a search on Dr. Glenn Hosking, you can always find out how to contact him. And, you know, as an out and proud LGBTIQ psychologist, you're somebody that we can come to and feel comfortable. Sorry, Russ has one more question.
Glenn, I do have one more question for you, and I think it's important.
Yeah.
I just know that during times like this, tough times for our GLBTI community and everybody, for example, I've heard people say that you should get out there and support your community to make yourself feel better. How can people do that in our GLBTI community?
Well, it's a big challenge, isn't it? Because a lot of the community, you know, is closed. So, you know, if we sort of think about sort of the kind of main elements of the community that they're, you know, their venues are closed. And so there are challenges kind of within that. But, you know, I think that there are, you know, many great community organisations, many, you know, like Joy and like other sorts of organisations, that do need support. And, you know, if we sort of think, I mean, I had a whole lot of queer film festival films that I was seeing. That didn't end up running, and that was disappointing. But, and so it is, you know, it's more important, I think, in those kind of instances. And I listen to Joy all the time. I'm a member of Joy. And I was so excited to hear around the radiothon And, you know, I did Radiothon for 10 years in varying capacities while I was at Joy, and I know the kind of buzz that it sort of brings. But it was so good in this kind of time where a lot of people are struggling financially, that they found that opportunity to support their community. And I know it's a big challenge for people because they don't have the opportunity to connect with their community at this time. That's really difficult, and that certainly does add to some of that susceptibility that we were talking about before.
Just more questions at the end here. I've got another message that's from Paul from Moonee Ponds, who says, as a mental health professional of 15 years plus, I encourage us to look for the many silver linings we are experiencing. Thank you so much for that message, Paul. And I think that's definitely something we should be doing at the moment. There's another message that says we should discuss misogyny that sometimes is a result of internalized homophobia on the next show, especially amongst some gay men I know. And the last message, hi there, I'm loving the show, listening to you with a wine. Thank you, Tristan, for listening in as well. As I said, it's been great having you on the show, and we will get you back as soon as possible. Please, do a search on Greg Hosking if you are looking for some support. Mental health plans are readily available, certainly at this time. And, of course, teleconferencing and all sorts of other things are there to help you if you need a mental health plan or if you are struggling at the moment. Thank you once again, Glenn, for being back here on Joy 94.9.
It was lovely. Thanks.
Bye. Now, look, one thing I wanted to bring up with you, I wanted to bring it up with you last Tuesday night, but unfortunately the report was embargoed until 12:01 a.m. on Wednesday morning. I was dying to bring this to you. But it's about, and it's a report from FARE, which is the Foundation for Alcohol Research and Education. Now, I don't think you were at the program that we had back in April.
No.
But we had the CEO, Katrina Georgie, and she was on the program talking about the alcohol industry and their response to the COVID-19 pandemic. And some of the things that they've found out, and this is research done with them and the Cancer Council of WA and SITC, which is sober in the country, is that there is an alcohol ad every 35 seconds during COVID-19. Now, I haven't seen that on TV. I haven't seen that anywhere else, but it's mainly on social media. So alcohol companies are doing their best to take advantage of the time of the pandemic. Now, it says here that over 100 alcohol ads in 1 hour demonstrates the relentlessness of digital alcohol marketing during the COVID-19 restrictions. So this is basically through platforms like Instagram and Facebook. Now, I haven't noticed it because maybe my algorithm isn't that way, and yours also, Russ.
We talked about that before the show, didn't we? Yes.
But some people are getting absolutely bombarded. It was just saying in just 1 hour on a Friday night, 107 sponsored alcohol advertisements were displayed on a person's Facebook and Instagram accounts, which equates to approximately one alcohol advertisement every 35 seconds. And the sample of the alcohol advertisements that are analysed in this report said that 58% of them were saying, get easy access to alcohol without leaving your home. That was basically, just saying you can get it delivered. Save money were 55% of those ads. 35% of them were suggesting that you buy more. 24% were suggesting that you drink alcohol during the COVID-19 pandemic. 16% were saying use alcohol to cope, survive, or feel better. And 14% were saying to choose healthier alcohol products, maybe like low-carb beers and things like that. It's just sort of demonstrating the relentlessness of digital alcohol marketing. And with phrases like wine from home, stay in, drink up, and confinement sale, it's evident that the alcohol industry is using a global health crisis to its advantage. What do you think about that?
Look, I wouldn't be at all surprised if at some stage in the future that the connection between depression, trauma, all of the things that we've been taught by our good doctors and psychologist friends, that the alcohol industry isn't made to pay for these things. Oh, we've had royal commissions about so many things over the past few years, royal commissions over banking, royal commission over this and over that. Eventually, because these grog companies are targeting people, and a lot of them shouldn't be targeted,
I think it's shameless targeting.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So I would say that sooner rather than later we'll see something pass through Camberra Parliament where they won't be allowed to do it anymore.
Well, hopefully you'll be the one that instigates that.
I'd love to.
Because at the moment they're not spending any money on sports advertising. I believe that they'll come back as the saviour of the sports industry and say, you know what, we're here, we're going to make sure that sports survives. So I've got a feeling that's the sort of plan that they're looking at.
But you know what? I find advertising really annoying on my social media. Do you look at it? I never do.
Well, I suppose it's always subliminally there, but hopefully not too much. Unless you're listening to ads on Joy 94.9, of course.
Well, our ads are good, though.
I know. Look, we hope that you've enjoyed tonight's show and remind you that if you're experiencing immediate problems, or if content of this program raises issues that cause distress, you can call Lifeline on 13 11 14 or Beyond Blue on 1300 22 46 36, or go to joy.org.au/support.
Now, David, it is very important, and I reiterate, very important, to move away from self-destructive reasoning. Recovery involves breaking the cycle of addiction, removing the trigger of negative thinking, and restoring us all to emotional sobriety. One of the greatest highs in life is feeling good about ourselves. Always remember that none of us are alone in this world, and the very first step in recovery is to always just ask for help.
That's right. We want our community to be one of hope and look forward to your company next week as we continue to explore addiction on Hooked. Meanwhile, it's goodbye from Russ.
Goodbye.
And it's goodbye from me, David. Goodbye.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.